Welkom bij de Ben Tichelaar podcast bij BNR. De podcast over persoonlijk leiderschap. In mijn podcast ontvang ik bijzondere gasten met inzichten en ideeën die ons werk en ons leven verrijken. Deze week hebben we een hele speciale aflevering. Ik had de kans om een ware management-icoon te interviewen, Henry Mintzberg. Voor wie hem niet kent, Mintzberg is een Canadese management-hoogleraar, 80 jaar oud, die onder meer 20 boeken schreef en 20 eredoctoraten ontving. Iemand die er al decennia lang een groot genoegen in schept om allerlei management-mythes door te prikken. Ik sprak hem via Zoom tijdens een webinar dat werd georganiseerd door Management Impact. Mintzberg heeft een paar mooie dingen te zeggen over management, leiderschap, zelfsturing en over de balans in de maatschappij. In het eerste gedeelte van ons gesprek ging het over management en leiderschap. Eerste vraag aan Mintzberg: is de kwaliteit van het management in de organisaties in onze westerse samenleving verbeterd in de afgelopen jaren?
My view is that the practice of management has deteriorated significantly and steadily. And it's partly this separation we'll get into it later, maybe of leadership and management, which I don't think can be separated. but we also have to distinguish entrepreneurs who know what they're doing, like Steve Jobs was a classic example, or maybe Bezos at Amazon, from more established companies where too many people are too disconnected from what they're managing. And I have seen more and more and more of that to the great deterioration of so many, not only businesses, but NGOs and governments and lots of other things. Just a complete disconnect. And by the way, I should add that since he hasn't come up yet, surprisingly, but Trump is not what I mean by an entrepreneur. Trump is a manipulator and a charlatan. But I'm talking about real entrepreneurs.
Well, it's good that we cleared that first, you know, that everybody knows what we're thinking about that. you actually hinted already at a discussion that has been going on within management science for years and years, especially, you know, put forward by people like John Kotter, that there is actually a difference between leadership and management. And some people might even argue that, you know, leaders and manager are different persons. Maybe it's good, you know, I know that you have a strong opinion about that. Could you tell us what you think about that separation between the two?
Utterly destructive, utterly and totally destructive. If who wants a manager who doesn't lead? Can you imagine having a manager with no leadership qualities? Why would you want to work for somebody like that? Well, if you have a leader who doesn't manage, they don't know what's going on. They're so busy being top management up there somewhere that they don't know what's going on, because management is not about being removed. Management is about getting on the ground and finding out what's happening. You know, and that's not micromanaging. That's simply informing yourself, being in touch, firing up people, helping to energize people, and so on and so forth. And so the great leaders manage and the great managers lead. And this separate, you know, this is so Harvard in a sense, because they're creating great leaders, not mere managers. And just nonsense, sheer, utter nonsense.
Well, that's clear. Thank you for that very clear answer. Right. Hey, some people really believe that the current pandemic, you know, the whole crisis, the COVID-19 crisis in the world, will cause structural changes. And what do you think? For example, will the current crisis, for instance, change the way companies are run? Because so many people are working from home, need to be self-directed. You see a lot of self-directed teams at the moment. Do you think that this crisis, this pandemic, will change the way companies are managed?
Well, two things. First of all, if anything's going to change, it's exactly what you're saying. People are getting used to working at home and they're getting used to Zoom. You know, I always used to say that being in touch is on the ground, seeing, smelling, seeing expressions. Well, you can see my expressions on Zoom. You can see my hand movements. You can watch my facial expressions. So it gets pretty close. It's not entirely good because we can't smell each other. We can't pick up our waves or whatever, but we get pretty close. That's going to be very appealing. But as far as the general question is concerned, you know, there's a very smart Dane who once said that I never predict, especially the future. And I think he was exactly right, that optimists predict what they like and pessimists predict what they don't like. And so I don't like to predict. I can tell you what I like and what I don't like. You know, what I don't like is I hope that this kind of disconnected management doesn't keep going afterwards, or there's less of it. What I do like is that people may get a sense of what real management is about, and also may demand more of their managers. You know, if I'm working in a company and I'm earning so much and my chief executive is earning 300 times as much as I am, then that person is not a leader, period. They are not a leader. The signal they're sending out is they're 300 times more important than anybody else. That's not leadership with management. That's not leadership.
And so
maybe we'll start challenging that nonsense and start to make our organizations much more democratic isn't the right word, but more engaging for everybody so that people are respected and they respect the company or the organization in turn.
Yeah. Well, here in the Netherlands, actually, self-directed teams, self-leadership, you know, the Netherlands is a quite egalitarian country, as you may know. We know we like everybody to be equal. And that may be a cause as well that we like self-directed teams or self-leadership. It's a popular topic at the moment at management conferences, management literature. What is your take on that? Could we see it as the same as what you in one of your books call adhocracy, you know, the innovative organization? Is this a trend, you know, that's there to stay? What's your take on self-directed teams and self-directed professionals?
Well, you know, there's trends are always both ways. So, or not always, but usually. So there's certainly that trend in a lot of places because of the nature of technology. If you're dealing with highly educated people working in on difficult projects, then you have to organize that way. And there's more and more of that. And more of the currently popular enterprises in high technology and so on have to organize in teams. So there's going to be more of that. But countering that is this whole idea of somehow you've got leaders, you know, who have to be giving everybody instructions, and strategy comes from the top, which is more silliness. Strategy comes from learning on the ground. It doesn't come from sitting in an office in an office tower. You know, the Dutch and the Canadians, I think, share this kind of view with the Scandinavians too. I think maybe you have to live in a northern kind of cold climate, but Holland and Canada, and we share those norms. The Dutch and the Canadians have something very interesting in common, aside from the tulips that you send us every year for Ottawa. And that is, we're very suspicious of big, powerful neighbors.
Right.
We grow up in Canada looking always to the States as the big, powerful neighbor. In Holland, you've got Germany, who's historically, not so much now, but historically has played that role. That breeds a certain kind of suspicious nature. And that, I think, is to the benefit of both the Dutch and the Canadians. We kind of share that view of the world. And so we're not so inclined to accept nonsense the way the Americans are. I can't speak for the Germans, but the way the Americans are.
Yeah, so power raises suspiciousness in our countries. And you say that's a good thing.
Tot zover het eerste gedeelte van dit gesprek met Henry Mintzberg over management. Tijdens het webinar waarin we elkaar spraken, konden luisteraars ook vragen stellen, maar dat slaan we in deze podcast even over. We gaan meteen door naar het tweede gedeelte, over de balans in onze maatschappij. Volgens Henry Mintzberg is er in een gezonde maatschappij een evenwicht tussen de overheid, het bedrijfsleven en de gemeenschap. Of in zijn woorden, tussen de publieke sector, de private sector en de plurale sector. Mijn eerste vraag aan Mintzberg: is die balans tussen deze drie sectoren verbeterd in de afgelopen jaren in de westerse samenleving?
The healthy countries have that balance. The Scandinavian countries are the best examples, probably like Denmark, New Zealand, Canada, Holland, Germany. Those countries are well balanced. Of the developed countries, the two most out of balance are the United States and Britain, and they're both the great liberal democracies, except liberal democracy is no longer liberal and is no longer democratic. Liberal democracy has been co-opted by wealth and by power, And the real problem, this has been going on in the United States since Jefferson. Jefferson wrote, if you look on my blog, minstrel.org/blog, and go to Donald Trump is not the problem, that's a 5-part series I posted.
Okay, that's on your website.
You read a letter.
That's on minstrel.org, and there's your blog. And the title of the blog that we should read is again?
Donald Trump is not the problem.
Okay.
Parts 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And the first part opens with a quote from Jefferson, who says business is already trying to take over this country. And it's been nonstop ever since. But in 1989, something very significant happened. Is that for me? In 1989, the Berlin Wall fell.
Okay.
And the conclusion was that capitalism had triumphed. And that was wrong. Balance had triumphed. Do you need anything from me? You're okay?
No, everything's going well here. They're just hooking up some extra cables here to the computer. Yeah.
Okay. So balance had triumphed in 1989. The Eastern European countries were completely out of balance on the side of government.
Right.
And the Western democracies were balanced. The United States had huge welfare programs in the 70s.
Right.
It had high taxes in the 70s. But because of this false belief that capitalism had triumphed, capitalism has triumphed ever since. And it's thrown the balance completely out of control in the United States. The Supreme Court of the United States legalized bribery. It legalized bribery. It opened the door to...
In what way? These are some strong words, sir. So can you please explain what you mean with that?
Yeah. They opened the door to political donations.
Right.
The Supreme Court just allowed political donations, which is legalizing bribery. So certainly on the Republican Party side, but even both sides, the money that controls politics in the U.S. is out of control. In Britain, you've got a similar problem. You've got business in the form of the Conservative Party dominating the society, and you have the other extreme in Britain, not so much in the U.S., but in Britain, at least the Labour Party under Corbyn, was at the other extreme. So it was no real choice. Macron came up the middle in France, but in England, you had these extremes. And so these great liberal democracies are by far the worst ones in dealing with a pandemic among the developed countries.
Let me for 1 second interrupt you, because you are a business professor originally. You know, you teach at business schools, and you're actually saying that business has become too important in most societies. Is that actually what you're saying as well?
Yeah, well, I'm actually in a management school and I have a management position, so I'm interested in all kinds of management, but I love business.
Not just business, okay, that's okay, yeah.
Okay, that too. But I love business. I love my iPhone. I love my car. I love restaurants. I love hotels that know how to run properly. I love business in its place, which is the marketplace. Stay out of my government. You have no business in my government. I don't mean business people. They're citizens like I am. I mean businesses have no place in the government. Zero. They should have no seat at the table. This idea that we make regulations and give them a seat at the table, not only to get their advice, which we should get, but to give them a say in legislation, that's crazy. Business belongs in its place, which is the marketplace.
Very clear, very clear. And you're actually saying that this imbalance that you're observing now, business is becoming too big and too powerful in many societies, also plays a role in this crisis that we're now facing.
Yeah, to some extent. I think a lot of businesses have really tried to adapt and have stopped making cars or whatever and started making masks or whatever. So there's been an attempt to adapt on the part of many businesses who I think are well-meaning. The problem, to go back to where we were before, is the stock market. The stock market drives very short-term, very narrow behavior that's very dysfunctional. And that's why I think there's other ways to raise money. Co-ops, you have major co-ops. You're one of your biggest banks. I don't know how it's functioning now, but
the
you have major
co-ops. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. You have major co-ops. They don't need money from the stock market. You know, you have companies like Tata in India that issue shares but keep the controlling shares in family trusts. Same thing with most of the major corporations in Denmark. The corporations are controlled by family trusts, even though there are shares on the stock market. So they don't have to take this crap from kid analysts who want, you know, how much money did you make this week? And the idea of more. Apple passes $1 trillion in sales. And what happens? That's the starting point.
You're actually saying that there are two problems. That on the one hand, businesses have become too powerful in many societies. But on the other hand, there's also this problem that many businesses are corrupt because they don't actually supply us with what we need, but they just try to please stockholders, shareholders. And that's one of the heart of the problems.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying they don't supply us with what they need. They may well supply us with what they need, what we need. But what they do is they get co-opted by this intense pressure for more. How do you get more when you don't have any more ideas? You know, so you're sitting Apple with $1 trillion and the market is saying, good, that's the starting point. What are you doing next? And Steve Jobs is gone. You're not getting this incredibly innovative, product development anymore. And so did they play with the batteries? I don't know. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. But other companies, the banks around here, the telephone companies, I tried to cancel a telephone contract with one of the biggest companies in the country. Okay. I got this person on the phone. I explained everything. Good, fine. Now I'll send you on to somebody else who will do it. I go on to somebody else. She wants the whole story again. and says, good, now I'll pass you to the person who'll do it. In which case I exploded. Of course, it wasn't her fault, but I exploded. And I said, the only reason you're doing this is so I'll hang up the phone and give up. Yeah. That's corruption. That company, one of the biggest phone companies, and I'll say it, you know, is one of the biggest, Rogers, one of the biggest phone companies in this country, is corrupt when they do things like that.
Yeah. And it's familiar. It sounds familiar because everybody, you know, throughout the world knows that this is the way it works. And in your book, you're actually, I think that was one of the most impressive chapters actually in the new book. That's exactly about this problem, the battle between more and better, as you call it. And you actually said, and those are some very strong words, you said chasing more is a disaster for our companies, our societies, our planet, and ourselves. It's a disaster that we chase more all the time. But isn't that actually just a problem of, you know, of being human? Isn't that not only a problem for businesses, but it's a problem that's actually at the heart of being human?
No, not quite. It's one aspect of being human, but there are all kinds of dysfunctional aspects of being human. But doing better and better is just as deep inside of us. The idea of doing better all the time, and companies could be doing better and better. Instead of doing bigger and bigger, they could be doing better and better, and then they'll get more customers and they'll get more attention. You know, what are the restaurants you love? Are they the restaurants that are bigger and bigger and bigger? I've had Reisstaffel in Holland for one person. They sometimes make it for one person. And there's 10 tables in the place, you know, and they just do it well.
Right.
It's not always about bigger, bigger, bigger. It's about better, better, better. And you can replace bigger with better. So this idea, I personally think that nobody should be able to own what they can't use. Okay. Whether it's wealth or why should some people have? There was a story of a chief executive of Goldman Sachs years ago who used to go to the best restaurants for lunch and order every single appetizer so he could taste them all and decide which one he wanted to eat. Okay? That guy belonged in jail. I think he should go to jail. We need a war on waste. That's what we need, a war on waste.
Last question I have for you, and then we'll move to the questions from the audience. One of the things that you say in your book, and I really love that phrase, is that communityship is actually more important than leadership. So communityship is more important than leadership. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, the sense of community, the feeling when you walk into a place. I was in two hotels in England once in succession, and one of them was this corporate kind of chain hotel, kind of cold and distant. Years ago, when you had to use the phone, we ran our program there, and there were Japanese people there, and they charged them $10 a minute to make a call to Japan. A guy from BT, British Telecom, who was in our class, said that call cost them less than a cent a minute, and they were charging $10 a minute. That's the kind of stuff, okay? Then I went into another hotel. You walk in, you just smell it. Everybody's enthusiastic. It was in the Lake District, and I said to the waiter, you know, what kind of trails are there around here for hiking? And he said, I don't know. I'll bring you the manager of the hotel. And the manager of the hotel comes 5 minutes later, all the time in the world, explaining every trail. I speak to the woman behind the desk. She boasts to me that the manager had been there 20 years and the sales manager had been there 12 years and she was there 4 years. You could feel the sense of communityship in that place. I mean, I made up the word, like leadership and ownership and citizenship, communityship. You could feel the sense of community in that place. People love to work there.
Tot zover deze bijzondere aflevering van de Ben Tichelaar podcast. Tot zover het gesprek met Henry Mintzberg. Vond je dit interessant? Check dan ook mijn andere podcasts via BNR of je favoriete podcast-app.